Blog Talk Radio.
Looks like we're shy of one horse.
You brought two too many.
Show number 1,422, I think. Gotta double check this shit before I get to 1,500. Anyway, welcome. As you're ready to sit down and get down with the chefs for a couple of hours plus, courtesy of your loving mad scientist here at Soul Tree Radio and The Raw. Excuse my voice. I'm your host, Michael Lewis Ingram, and as always, it is good to be with you. Soul Tree Radio and The Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and the Assassins of the Black Athlete Sports Network. Get all the good shit, the who, what, when, where, why, and how, right now at www.BASNNewsroom.com. Shout out to all the members of the Brother Man Network, Radio Reggie doing his thing in Richmond, Virginia, Ricky Hampton Sr. in Detroit, Mike Roberson in Oakland, California, D. Orlando Lebetter and Sonic Cheryl Jones in Philadelphia. My sincerest condolences to Cheryl, the loss of a family member, and as well, Pat Freeman, the mighty Oba, handling his business in Western New York, doing business on behalf of the Minor Football League, and still doing damage with his book, The Art of the Interview, Book One. It's on Amazon. It's a great read. I highly recommend it. Also sending a birthday shout out to my brother, John Harrison. John Harrison is one of the Harrison and Hunley halves of Total Music Concepts. They taught me how to spin and helped me get into my overall groove. So, Butch, happy belated birthday. Hope you're having one on me. And, as always, many, many more. With us in the lineup right now, my brother, Radio Reggie. Reggie, what's going on? Can you hear me?
Peace and blessing, African, digging for the sense of justice. Thank you for all that you do. And to our ancestors who have been exalted, we have highest ancestors, we give honor and praise. As we said, thank you for paving the way.
All right, so Reggie, you know, the last couple of shows, we knew that there was going to be some backlash when they realized that so-called college athletes we're finally going to be able to get some sort of compensation in the form of deals arranged through their name, image, and licensing. We know that college football, we'll say specifically college football, but college basketball too, was pimping off of this and was stealing, literally stealing images of players for video games. That seemed to be settled, but this name, image, and licensing thing seems to allow for better teeth in preserving this stuff. And I think it's a necessary thing that should have been done a long time ago. What say you?
Well, the thing that troubles me, number one, the scholarships are just for 1 year. Nobody seems to understand that. There's no such thing as a full 4-year ride in the whole, no professor coming in later explaining that.
Yep.
Number two, you have something called gray shirts, white shirts, and red shirts. All these different status are done for academic reasons when you have the European schools that can have 300, 400, and 500 student athletes on a football team and never see the damn field. It's always amazing how I know we're talking one thing, but our HBCUs are always getting hit hard with the NCAA when it comes to graduation and also grades. But yet, when you see the big powerhouses like the Nebraskas, the Penn State, the Texas, I mean the Tennessees of the world, even the Ole Miss and South Carolina, they never get hit with the same sanctions that HBCUs do. Now, when you have Florida A&M have six sports that are hit with sanctions, and most of them do with academics and grading points, that tells you right there, the NCAA is always telling them that not only are we going to make sure that we're going to make it hard for you recruits to acquire the athletes, but we're going to make sure and make it hard when it comes to compete for championships, and we don't want your ass in that. I mean, when Mr. Weeks got the Golden Spike Award, formerly at Southern University, they were so upset they didn't know what to do because a black baseball player coming from a black school had the audacity to win the same version of the Heisman Trophy on the Golden Spike Award, and you ain't seen that since. So, my issue is, number one, they've already told the schools that they don't have the resources to set these deals up. They want the players, athletes to get the deal set up by themselves. That's not going to work because, you know, Skippy Doo, Boo-Boo the Fool, and Yogi and them going to be in the background ushering people in there to make sure they steer these young people in a certain direction. And I'm sorry, man. We're going to see a lot of casualties of black athletes are going to be the ones that are going to get hurt. It never fails. The ones that always get hurt.
No question. Now, I want to ask the question, when is Dabo Swinney supposed to retire? Because he said a few years ago that he would retire rather than have college athletes get paid for name, image, and likeness, whatever they want to call that. But, I'm like, look, don't let the doorknob hit your ass on the way out, motherfucker. You know, go ahead, retire. Or are you talking out both sides of your neck like most of these coaches?
Especially when he just signed a new damn contract. I mean, who do you think you're
talking
to? Come on. We're talking about this bullshit. Nobody wants to hear this bullshit. Come on, are you serious?
No. Exactly.
You know, come on. I mean, and the thing that's so troubling, Mike, is that, again, I go back to our HBCUs. We have failed the HBCUs, number one, because the HBCUs look at sports as basically being a hindrance. They don't look at the amount of money and resources sports can do to uplift the schools. All that they look at is, hey, all we can do is just be bothered with this. And as long as you don't mess up my academics, you don't bring no scandals or nothing, you can keep sports coming. But as long as you bring no academics or scandals, we okay. And that's a messed up part.
You know what? You bring up a great point because I'm like, when the hell did this mentality infect the HBCUs? I mean, we knew in the 60s and the 70s, the HBCUs had a clear mandate. Academics was this, athletics was that. But the players, these student athletes, always got both in equal measure because of exceptional people that they had behind the scenes. So when did you finally find evidence that something was smelling, was not smelling right with all this process?
I think what really started to bother me was in the mid-80s and 90s when you started to see the erosion of HBCUs. Number one, when Florida A&M won the national championship in football in 78, all of a sudden, these big sanctions came down. And also, Florida A&M in that year was voted the number one school in the nation. Not Harvard, not Yale, not Princeton. It was Florida A&M. Now, it's interesting that Governor Bush and Republicans started to attack the Florida states, Florida A&M, and all of a sudden the grants that they got previously mysteriously dried up. That was number one. Number two, when, in my opinion, the SWAC started to kind of expand themselves a little bit, all of a sudden the MEAC kind of dropped the ball because, I mean, it was always a MEAC school that was getting in trouble. And then all of a sudden leadership under the SWAC. I just got to say, Mike, I cannot prove it. I'm not here to throw no stones, but we had a lot of scandals in our HBCUs from upper management.
Doubt.
Where President Obama said that you guys are messed up by financial money and you're not graduating people like you should. You don't have the doctoral programs like you should. And now we got to start cutting bait. And this doesn't happen all the time. I mean, you got a lot of presidents that run the schools like they're God. I mean, you'd be surprised some of the suites that some of these presidents stay in doing football. And even, again, I hope Professor can tune in. You got some of the presidents who will get mad at homecoming because they don't have no pictures of them on the program where the football players and everybody are really the people that bring the money in because they out there on the field killing themselves, and that's the entertainment between them and the band. So it's crazy, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think you're right in this regard, and I know there had to be a personal disconnect with a lot of the players at some of the schools because of just what you're talking about. But I can distinctly remember Ernie the Cat Ladd as Coach Rob was leaving this world, and he talked affectionately, almost with tears, like talking about how many times he wished he could go in there one more time and do damage for Coach Rob. And
yeah,
it wasn't just feigned emotion. You know, obviously it was more than just playing football. It was part of the sum total of experience that he had there at Grambling and how it benefited him. And we don't hear college players of most ethnic stripes talk about that. You know, they don't talk about how much they loved the experience at the school. Yeah, you can play well at a school and all that stuff, but when they talk about, or at least when HBCU players were talking about playing at a school, it was the whole experience that helped them get over. And it wasn't just, you know, the Saturday afternoons and booty shakings of cheerleaders and stuff like that.
Yeah, the thing that really troubles me again, that our HBCUs, some of them have mistreated our alumni, and a lot of alumni won't even send their children back to HBCU, let alone give back. And that goes back to leadership. I remember when Grambling mistreated their football players, but they had staff infections when they had to take 19, 20-hour bus rides, be wore out before they could even get to the game. I mean, it was crazy. And stuff like that, man, you know. It makes no sense how we mistreat our athletes. And then you have people calling in on Al Sharpton's show talking about the athletes to shut up and just play. That's black on black and crime right there. That's the sad
there
part
you,
about
that's
it.
Exactly right. That's the time when that phrase should actually be administered, because we've seen some unspeakable crimes. And as part of what we're going to talk about tonight, some of these crimes have not been properly addressed. And in this case, I bring up the case of quarterback Terrell Pryor and some of his teammates. And I was waiting for Patrick on this, but I know Patrick will chime in on this later. Four of the Ohio State football players who were disciplined for receiving free tattoos. Free tattoos, you know, not crab legs, you know, not cash, but tattoos. And other intermissible benefits in exchange for memorabilia, asking for Buckeyes victories and individual rewards to be restored. The Buckeyes were forced to vacate victories and records as part of NCAA trans sanctions nearly a decade ago. So now think about all of this. I remember Terrell Pryor. I remember the pad that he gave up that he autographed, you know. The money he was going to use to pay fucking bills. As a matter of fact, his quote says, the time has come. You know, we should get our wins, give records back, and the legacy of what we did. And we had not looked past it. The NCAA suspended us, but they let us play in the Sugar Bowl win versus Arkansas because the people who put together the bowl said straight up, we can't have all of this. We need them niggers out there. Get them niggers back out there on that damn field. And didn't they do it? Terrell Pryor ended up playing, and he won the game against the Razorbacks. And, of course, even with all of that, they said, we should turn him into a wide receiver.
But look how he damaged his pro career. I mean, at one time, last year, he was playing wide receiver for the Cleveland Browns, and then messing around playing for the Washington football team. It was unfreaking real.
That's true.
And he was a talented quarterback. But yet he
had broke
to swallow.
Listen, he has the record for longest run for a touchdown by a quarterback, 92 yards when he was at Oakland. But
I give you another person, my homeboy, Ronald Carey. This is during the game.
I remember Curry from North Carolina. Who are you talking about?
Yeah. I'm talking about the quarterback from Penn State that played for the Seahawks, the running back.
Oh, Michael Robinson.
Yeah, Michael Robinson. Michael Robinson set the record in the Orange Bowl for most touchdown passes when Penn State played. And they did everything they can to make sure he's a running back.
That's right. Yeah,
you know,
unbelievable.
Yeah. And the sad thing about it,
I always thought they gave him bonus money to switch positions.
It might have, but the sad thing about it, when he's here in Richmond, because he and my older daughter Shantae came out of around the same year. Virginia Tech, to show you how Frank Beamer and backwards as Virginia Tech was, they want him to be a linebacker. That showed how crazy they were. NBA talking about, we'll make you be a defensive back. Well, he could play defensive back, but my thing is, he wanted to play quarterback, and he proved himself.
Yeah.
But what they do, they say, well, my good friend Coach Richard McPhee, he had Richard Virginia, was at Penn State, and he ran the summer camp. He made one call to Joe Powell and them, and they got him a full scholarship up there at Penn State, and the rest is history.
Yeah, no question. We got Sonic Cheryl in the house as well. Cheryl, I love you, sweetheart. Well, my condolences.
Hold it. Is that my baby there? Is that my boo? Is that my baby? Oh,
that's your
Lord,
boo.
Have mercy. Oh, Lord. I got to drop to my knees and the love God is there. Hello, beautiful.
Hi,
hello,
how
darling.
Are you?
You know I miss you, baby. I'm just like a little puppy dog. I'm shivering in the corner, shaking, girl. I'm not beyond growling when it comes to you, Cheryl. Lord, have mercy.
Well, Michael.
Let me get a – hey, look, Mike, just give me 30 seconds. Just give me 30 seconds to say on a serious tip, Cheryl, I love you. Thank you, the beautiful queen. But thank you for being a beautiful Nazarene queen that's fighting out there in the streets for democracy, because it's a damn shame. I just got to say that this country right here is one step away from fascism, because what
these damn Republicans
are doing.
These Republicans are unbelievable. And I love our president. He's trying to be diplomatic. He cannot be diplomatic.
You can't be. You can't bring a knife to a gunfight.
And I know they're trying to reach across the aisle and all this to try to unite the country that bobblehead, redhead Joe done did. But this is something that the Republicans wanted to do all along. And all
Trump
gave them the red light to be the racist bastards. They've always been. They really believe that they are the only ones that are supposed to vote. And this is why they try not to tell history the way it is. Because you know what? The younger generation that is coming up don't believe in their bullshit.
Yeah.
So they're
trying
to say, we brainwashed. No, we ain't brainwashed. They kids. They see shit in black and white. They're awoke, as people are saying, and they don't like it because they can't control them. They're voting against what their mother and father are going against. And another thing I'm disappointed in the Spanish people in Florida. So put up this man that is the governor and stuff, because they got flashbacks of aggression, of dictatorship. Well, what do
you
think the United States is going through now, and you're voting for these bastards?
They should know better, huh?
Thank
exactly.
They should, They should see the signs.
Thank
and
you.
Well, Cheryl, I'll go you one better, because if anybody has watched the Al Pacino movie Scarface, it was highlighted under the premise that in the 80s, when the Marielles, the Cubans, many of them were sent here, they were considered the bad ones. They were considered the thugs, et cetera, and
the
Al Pacino based his Tony Montana character off of that. And the movie highlighted that, because that's exactly what they said the Marielitos were about. So we have this poison coming from us in all directions. But to relate it to the sports thing, we got to give Cheryl Negro Damas credits, because Cheryl said a long time ago this bullshit was going to stop. And now with name, image, and licensing, they've got to change everything up, because now players can make their own deals. They can, whatever the market bears, they can do that now. And there have been a whole lot of coaches very hypocritical about the process. The coach at Clemson University, Dabo Swinney, who is a fucking scumbag, had the nerve to say that he would quit, he would resign, if players were getting funds for playing for playing college football. So
well,
when you resign, motherfucker, exactly,
quit
motherfucker.
Quit.
I'm waiting.
How many years have these guys in college been playing? If they get hurt, the university don't want to pay the medical expenses.
Thank you.
And shit like that.
There you
it's
go.
About time. And yeah. Now they can hold them as the slaves they were holding them towards going to the NFL and everything else. Oh, it's a brand new damn day, okay?
And Cheryl, look at how the female athletes been mistreated. Not only from basketball, but even other sports in gymnastics. And you've seen so many female athletes out there, including cheerleaders, who get hurt, and they really don't get talked about because all the focus is focused on the men's sports. Case in point, Title IX. Look how they lost their blue bunny mind when they had to share revenue with the female sports, and they lost their mind. What do you think, Cheryl?
I think first of all, when it comes to females in sports, let's face it, it is not equal. The money's not equal, nothing.
Not by far.
Not by a long shot. They play just hard. They bring medal back. They bring championships just as hard as the male. It's a damn
It's not harder.
You
remember when the NCAA tournament happened, Cheryl, and how the women were mistreated, how they didn't have the equipment there and they had the food that looked like dog food? They said, would you eat this shit? It was unreal. And when they went on social media, all of a sudden NCAA said, oh, it was a mistake, and they had to rush track trails down there to clean everything up.
Yeah, but it wasn't a mistake. That's what they think. That's how they've been allowed to, what's the name? You know, the gates of everything is coming to surface. With all the shit that's going on in the country, all the inequality and all different things is coming to light. And these crackers don't know what to do. This is why they're trying to make all this legislation for us not to vote. We still going to fucking vote. You ain't stopping shit. Because you know what? We saw with our power, and if we go and vote, so you want me to have an ID? Motherfucker, I got an ID. Here it is. Now what? What are you going to do after that? A lot of people got IDs because they drive and every damn thing else. You need it to cash a check. You need it to, if you get a certain amount out of the bank, you got to show your driver's license. So do you really think that's going to stop us? Just in sports, like, the young lady in tennis who's having issues, mental issues, and issues with the paparazzi, don't demonize her because she's telling her truth. It's her truth. Because the sports commentators are vicious. They've always been vicious for people of color. They've always been. And she don't want to be with the bullshit. Don't ask me.
That's true.
You don't really want to answer and then demonize me because I gave you my answer. So I'd rather not deal. I'd rather not answer you.
So in the spirit of all of this that's happening right now, not just with college athletes like Reggie Bush wants his Heisman back, and of course in addition to Terrell Pryor and them getting recognized for the fact that things were taken from them and they were pimped out. You know, we can think about almost any situation where somebody was unceremoniously stripped of their eligibility because they ate a fucking cheeseburger that somebody else was supposed to give them. Now, this cocksucker Dabo Swinney says that he would resign once college athletes or scholar athletes, student athletes, get compensated. Okay. Resign, bitch. Where the fuck are you now? Exactly.
See him.
Get the fuck out.
Because he ain't going to let go of that damn salary. He thinks he won coach. And the rest
That's
ain't
right.
going to follow him. Because guess what? they're going to lose their players to other schools. And a lot of people are starting to go to black colleges now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? The tide is changing. The tide is changing. Y'all better wake the fuck up.
Yeah, but so like
y'all
Reggie said.
Y'all had your foot on our throat. And
the administrations in these HBCUs have to have their game together. Everything's going to expand with this name, image, and licensing thing. And when Master P's son cashed in on a $2.5 million deal, I'm like, happy for him, hooray for him, and all that other shit. Now, I know a lot of HBCU kids coming in ain't going to get that kind of action. But the fact that they're entitled or should get some is at the heart of this. And the schools and the administrations in the schools have to encourage this so they can bring better talent to the fore.
Yep, and get money for the schools. You damn right. But you know what it is. They got a clean house. They got to get rid of these old-ass dinosaurs that are living in 1970, 1980. They need to get rid of them. They need to update their board. They need to get some young, fresh blood with technology and marketing into these HBCU colleges is what they need. And the talent is out there. It's out
there. Of course it is.
They just don't want to take advantage of it because they're used to stealing the money and doing everything else for what's good for these black colleges. And they got to go. They got to go.
It got to go is at the heart of this. But, you know.
And what it is, you know what? These people that are in these cities where the HBC black colleges are, they need to get together and protest or do whatever they got to do to get rid of these people that are holding these seats. Or they need to go after their seats to replace them. One of the two.
No kidding. Now, if you had a child, boy or girl, who is eligible now, how would you take your approach as a parent with this whole thing now that, say, Danielle was, say, a gymnast or a basketball player, how would you take this and Eric Satterwhite in the mix? How would you do this as a parent as far as being diligent on what she could possibly get out of it?
Well, my daughter was a basketball player, and the reason why she stopped playing was she was saying that the girls play dirtier than the boys, and she's small. And she said, Mom, it's not worth it because she would have got a full ride to Lincoln University on basketball.
Okay.
And she didn't take it. She said the lifting weights and all this extra stuff they try to make people. Danielle said, I'm a bowler. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There are things that, you know, and she had asthma. But she was very good at what she did. She was excellent. Mm-hmm. She learned AI's crossover and everything. She was good, but she was small. And it's a shame that they got stuck with them, too. I'm not saying that these women in basketball are perfect. They're not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they need to learn a little bit more. They play. They can be vicious, just like the men.
Yeah.
They can
Yes.
be.
They
can be.
Well,
and that's the only reason why. And my children, well, my son went to Delft State, but my daughter picked a black university. And she went to Hampton to see, you know, she went to all the, you know, good black universities before she picked Lincoln University. So that's my mindset of where my kids, because I really wanted her to go to a black university, and she got a hell of education at Lincoln.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because they dumped their money back into the school and to the kids.
But now,
you know, I felt, I tell people now, look at their almost a number one school. They're number two working on number one, whereas Cheney used to be that. Cheney's like a damn ghetto. With all these alumni, if you go to Cheney University, you'd be like, oh, my fucking God, what happened? It's like being in the ghetto. It's horrible.
It's funny. Professor and Eric were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, and we got both on the line. Eric, first with you. We see now there's going to be more backflack coming from the NIL situation. Other players are speaking up and saying, well, wait a minute. Y'all got to do right by me. You know, Terrell Pryor is talking about the fact that they had victories taken away from him because he gave his draws away to somebody for free tattoos. Now, I know it's more to it than that, but, you know, that's the very least of this as this thing spreads out. And good evening to everybody. Please skip my mask.
Yeah, how's everybody doing?
Mm-hmm. All good, brother.
Okay, good. Just wanted to make sure you could hear me. I had the right switch. So a couple of points the sister was making regarding, you know, like women's basketball and the competitiveness and collegiate basketball and how many student athletes lose their love, you know, for the game because a lot of times they play it for holistic reasons and the love of the game. And then the demands that are put on their time collegiately and these over-demanding coaches and these cardio tests and fitness tests that they have people, especially women's basketball player. I mean, in many ways, it's more over the top than men's in terms of some of the conditioning drills. And you see a lot of these women coaches just run like oligarchies. I mean, you talk about dictatorships and they get fired and there's transfers and people leaving these universities. And then there's other pressures that come with that, you know, for a high school girl moving into that environment when they start seeing maybe, you know, how intercommunications are and pressures around that if it's not your lifestyle per se. You know, those are realities. And I won't be more specific than that. Wise people can read between the lines. But to your current point with, you know, you're talking about Pryor and these athletes, you know, I mean, yes. I mean, it's a gray line between, you know, like, you know, it's a gray line between, like, you know, ticket sales and selling merch and moving merch, you know, and selling your jersey. And a lot of times because a student athlete at Division I school, if the school has a contract with, you know, whomever that may be, the big sneaker organizations need not advertise for them and say their names, they get an endless supply of all kinds of footwear, right?
Okay.
You know, running shoes, sneakers, and they sell them on campus to other students, you know, and that's illegal. Right, because that's free gear, or they'll sell, you know, the basketball gear or the sweats or the uniforms, you know, or whatever it may be, because a lot of times it has signatures that other students don't get, and they parlay that, right? You know, or they'll fence it, right? They'll fence it, say, hey, man, you be my out. I can't do it directly. I bring you the shoes. I can't give you my size. Correct.
Yes,
but that was a way to try to, you know, again, generate some income. Right, where there was none, you know, and starving, this, that, and the other. And then, you know, you can't communicate with agents, right, because of the eligibility factor and what can go on with that. And then there's other things that take place. But there is a cheap component that comes with that, too, unfortunately, because there are some student athletes, you know, who, and I'm using the word student reluctantly, can take the cheap route. You know what I mean? They can take the cheap route. You know, they are in it for all the inducements. They are in it for all the fringes. And they really play it borderline. And there's ways to mask it and cover it. And then it never ends good, you know, in those situations. So, you know, it's really a wide open landscape because what also can take place, too, if a, you know, we talked about, you know, Percy Miller's kid, you know, Master P, a.k.a. Tennessee State, and was associated with that. Now, the contract's only good if you're at the school, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the moment, you know, I mean, these scholarships aren't like when my era, when they were 4 years, right? You know, you signed a scholarship. You had to get released from your scholarship because you had a four-year contract of free education. Nowadays, it's year to year, right? So if you get someone coming in and they want to work with some tech firm for X amount of dollars and it causes conflict, the coach can say, man, we're not going to bring you back. What happens to the contract, right? There is no more contract.
That's true.
You know? Sure, and yeah. So, right, there isn't. And so also the resentment factor of other students, you know, because yeah. How does that work? How do you monitor and maintain those things? So there's a balance that has to be done in that episode because
right.
It can get out of control really,
hey, but
really
Eric,
quickly.
Eric, here's my question, Eric. As
yes.
I thought to Cheryl, when it comes
yes.
to women in Title IX, how
yes.
much vitriol did these schools have against Title IX? And a follow-up, if I may.
Much, much vitriol, because some schools do not have a full-fledged athletic team. Like they may have women's basketball, they may have softball, but they may not have a women's
mm-hmm.
swimming team, right? They may not have
mm-hmm.
other components. And then there's tennis, you know, things of that sort, golf, what have you. But there's men's sports too, right, that may have those
mm-hmm.
components. So, yes, the Title IX really opened things up for women's athletes, but it's still, you know, not full-fledged, per se, in terms of full honoring with a lot of universities.
Okay, and the follow-up question, and I'm going to say this, it really pisses me off. When it comes to our black females and cheerleading, they do everything they can to make sure our black females don't be cheerleaders. They say they're too fat or they make sure they shame them. Why is it that we got all these brothers out here on the field mm. when it comes to black females, we have a problem?
Well, you know, I mean, misogyny stuff has always been a problem. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much, I mean, there's so much community relations, you know, stuff that happens with that as well. And one of the biggest components where a study was done, and it would be a whole show, but
mm-hmm.
it was a study done where because, you know, so many households were headed by women, right, and then what was taking place
mm-hmm.
in the disrespect around that where the mother was only there and that whatever a male
yeah.
child may have seen and then other women came in, it may have slanted their views of women. We see it all the time. You know, where
yes.
it's not honorable. I mean, we don't have to look far in terms of what they consider certain music, per se, where it's just, you know,
mm-hmm.
atrocious and highly slanderous, you know, towards women and the imageries that we constantly
yes.
see where it's only physiology. We look no further than social media, right, where you have social media models and it's just really a physiology thing. It has nothing
mm-hmm.
to do with intelligence and it's all dressed down
yeah.
and borderline raunchy, right? And so creating that dignity factor that you're talking about and that respect factor that comes with that, man, there's so much work to be done in that area that, you know, hopefully there's a
shift.
Yes.
Eric, if I
yes.
can, I want to bring Professor into this because Cheryl brought
Please.
Up the fact that her daughter had an opportunity and because of whatever, she couldn't make it at Lincoln. But I'm thinking if she was a freshman now, you know, there would be offers where she could have posters made of her, things like that connected with the school. But in the Terrell Pryor thing, the mention
mm-hmm.
is made about the victories that were taken from him. Now, Professor, you remember Coach Rob being verified and then vilified because of that son of a bitch Paterno. So are we going to see a rash of situations where we're going to see justice done in the case of Coach Rob being verified as number one and Coach Paterno having his wins taken away because it's all going to be part of the image factor, if they're being honest about this. And Penn State, I would think, would not want the image of a losing school because of the scandal that happened with that bastard. And good evening again to everybody.
Good evening, Yankees. how can I put this delicately? You know, trying to get through this without cussing because I'm gonna be around kids and the family this weekend. I can't be using that language like y'all use. But having said that, one kind of has nothing to do with the other because
okay.
when have these Division I Power 5 schools truly been honest?
Never.
Okay.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how many of our friends have we seen move out of the projects into
mm-hmm.
a nice house with a car
yep.
because they're too far up for the bus line, and all this other stuff to get, you know, mom and our dad and our first cousin and whoever gets a real nice job. And that you know, you and I both know they ain't qualified for. Well, she's in customer relations. Like, she's in customer relations at the bank. Where's her office? Down the hall. Why is her office down the hall? So she's not that easy. You know, her son is a celebrity, and we don't want you to see him. You know, we don't want her, you know, having run-ins with people here, like she's at a game or whatever after they see her. Yes. And the reality is, we don't want you to see her because she down there, she ain't doing nothing. You know, she's working on her memoirs or whatever. She ain't got nothing. What she's doing ain't got nothing to do with banking. We just going to pay her $160,000 a year until he leaves to go to the pro. Okay? Yeah. Or, you know, or one of my favorites, you know, the guy's supposed to be in class and he's riding around campus and his 442. And blast back muffler so everybody knows.
Yeah, with the dual exhaust, the 442 with the dual exhaust.
That one.
Yeah, I'm aware. And real quick, sir, keep building on that because you just brought up a point, and I know we move fast here, but you know, haven't seen the scholarship athlete thing for literally 40 years, where knowing so many firsthand accounts of how jocks get taken care of right in broad daylight in every one of those years. SMU was given the death penalty. That whole Southwest Conference thing with those Texas oil men and how they were funding everything, even what the shows reveal was still lightweight because what did they call it? The Pony Express, right? Craig James, right? Now that's my era. I visited them in college, right? I mean, as a high school senior, they were recruiting me, and you know they were really pumping that Express for, hey, SMU, rah, we got this thing. I mean, when I seen how they were being taken care of in broad daylight and how they would just talk bodaciously of what you could get taken care of. I mean, there's countless stories. I know people, too many people personally, who've been taken care of while they were in college, were in the same age group, telling how they were getting taken care of. I knew a friend whose job was, he said, Eric, I finally got some money. I said, what's that? He said he was supposed to watch the gym under some kind of financial aid thing. When the gym is closed, and he was getting $1,000 a month. Legit. Picking up his check at the registrar's office every Friday. Hey, what do you want to do this weekend, man? I got the check. Could you at least open the gym? Because I sure haven't seen you or the gym open in the last 6 months, but he's getting taken care of.
Yep.
There's so many ways this has been done over the years that it's just implausible to think that there's really a shift other than public knowledge, right? Because we can never not lambaste the Penn State thing. They never get off our hit list. They never get off our crap list because at the very beginning of that, we were breaking it down. It's a network. Oh, Papa Joe was still a saint when we were just all in on blasting Sandusky, blasting the whole operation, you know, pulling back the profiles of everything, right? That's factology 101. And so the thing is, as criminal as Penn State was and is, they still didn't face the death penalty that SMU faced for breaking off Dickerson and a whole host of other players there. So I'll leave it there.
The problem there, Penn State was part of the Power Five. Thus, the rules that govern them are not the same because SMU was an upstart.
Southwest Conference.
Yeah, but
it doesn't exist no more. Yeah, it doesn't exist. You know, SWC. Yeah.
They were supposed to be losing. They were not supposed to be winning. And to have two of them,
right,
black one, and they're going to come. They have the utter gall to beat. I think they beat Texas A&M, and
they were number one in the nation for a minute.
Okay, and they were not family. You know, they were not family. Alabama can lose a game and still stay number one because, hey, they're part of the family. Texas, you know, and think about it this way. Texas is so rich. I mean, and I know if you see their roster, number 42, He was a defensive lineman. His dad played down the street from where I live at Fayetteville State 20-something years ago. And, you know, how can I put this nicely? He has a good job. Don't get me wrong. Mom has a good job. They're both making good money. But really? You know, really? But then he won't leave Texas because, hey, he would most likely take a pay cut.
I mean, as far back as Earl Campbell, man. Earl Campbell, they were breaking him off. Ricky Williams was getting broken off. Them dudes were living on campus, man. And it's a total different. In UCLA under John Wooden, they always say that pyramid needs a tunnel because that guy, Sam's his first name. I can't remember his last name. That booster, Sam Gilbert, that's his name. That booster was the one that built the Wooden program. You know, so taking care of all those blue chip athletes. And Tri-Canyon used to talk about that when he was at Long Beach State, like, you're coming after me. I mean, you need to look at that Wizard of Westwood, man. You may find violations from here to the hell freezes over.
Well, he should
never happened.
He should have looked at Lil Forrest Gump that was at in Chapel Hill, because I know Valvano got nailed because he had a kid that moved out of one of his kids moved out of the projects and had a 4.42 that he would be rapping at a time when he was supposed to be in class. And, you know, just little things like that, you were not going to get that at an HBCU because it just was not that kind of availability of money, although they may have been some, you know. And then there were legit situations, too, because when our team went to the Nationals in 66 and 67, they won the national championship, they wore Blazers. Because we had guys who, I'll call his name out, he's deceased now, but App came to school with a pair of jeans that was really too short, and he had one pair of dress pants. He had grown from 6'4 to 6'8, and it was still the same pants he had. Even with the cuffs out, they were too short. And so Coach arranged for them to get blazers and slacks. And a white, dress shirt. But the whole team got that. And matter of fact, he got one, although he had a collection. But see, that's the thing. When you do things like that are a benevolent nature, I truly have no problem with it. I've been there. Like I said, I know where, because I was telling people, some guys, we were having a discussion Monday. I see where some of these guys come from and some of these girls come from. You know, I know your man. He had never slept in a bed by himself until he got to college, and he wanted to know was his roommate going to sleep with him. Because he's a 6'6", 6'8" guy who was from a family of about 10, 12 children. Mm-hmm. And he got in the middle, so he was always in the bed with somebody else. And then, like, his coach said, how you and your brother sleep? Because y'all too tall. He said, well, coach, you know, we slept on the outside, and the little kids slept on the inside. That's how they had to sleep. That was home. And you still have to address those kinds of things, because a kid coming from a household like that not only has to share a bed, he probably has to share clothes. And I have never had a problem. I mean, I've seen people who did that fairly openly. Case in point, I know young men who came to Fayetteville State, and the AD says, I actually walked in on the situation, and the coach told me, the AD told me what was going on. I said, sweetheart, so take care of your player. Because he's going to go out there and play his heart out. I had no problem with it. I still have no problem with it. But then there's what I call the greed factor. Mm-hmm. So some of the things got to be atrocious and stupid, ignorant, and all kinds of crazy stuff. And see, well, what's going to happen now is, well, first off, some of the players might end up with a pay cut. But beyond that, I hope they will go get their own representatives, a representation, because remember, the school is like a professional thing. They're already the ones you can't trust.
Right.
So but my, anything that goes down is going to be in their favor like it is now.
In fairness, there's so much destruction associated with this because if it still takes a lot of responsibility and conscientiousness because when you're a scholarship athlete and you're or getting a scholarship and it's mm-hmm. time to enroll, right? And kids are scrambling. They're checking. There's $1 trillion in student loan debt in the United States, right? And they're looking at loans and they're looking at grants and they're trying to get their classes and they're trying to get their money up. And then, you know, I had an experience, you know, my freshman year of college where the athletic department gave me this form. I'm watching all my peers scramble to try to get everything together. I went there, gave them this form. They put it in. And the lady looked at me so fast upwards because everything was paid for. And I just took it for granted. I didn't think about anything else about that. But it causes resentment amongst the rest of the student body. So not everyone is sitting there in a love fest for you. So if you go in with some public view of how much you're making and think that's going to be a fest, even your teammates, it's static there. It's going to be static there. Dude, you need to pick up lunch, man. You're the one getting the money. You know, all that kind of stuff. Those are the ramifications and factors that are coming to play because as knowing someone who's too many athletes who get contracts or burn themselves out by taking the side deal. You know, they took the side deal, and that's called getting cheap. They never make it. They backed out. So the money, they get lazy, don't want to work out. What's the effort for? Right? So in other words, if you get this deal, and the deal's associated with you going to a certain university, if you don't see it to fruition, the deal's done. And if you think that's enough where you don't have to go to class because you just pimped out the school to get broken off to use that, and they want to use all these HBCUs because they know the number one spending populace still is the black community, and they want to inroad to that economy before they start. That's why so many students, regardless of university or ethnicity, have credit cards without a job. When they're at school, they think, I'm at college. Oh, I got an American Express card, and I don't even work. And they have student – now they've got credit card debt, student loan debt, and they haven't even gotten a job yet. So there's no glory in, you know, this alleged thing, get your money, push back. And there is too much responsibility and technology-ish associated with this stuff that and what I'm seeing personally on the first forays – is watching people get pimped out.
There you go.
That's what I'm seeing.
You're trying to tell me you've seen that postcard or this cartoon that says, an 18-year-old cannot get a $10,000 business loan, but he can get $100,000 in school loans.
That's exactly right. And see,
when they say, well, there's nothing wrong with the system. You're talking about from the same bank, because see, what most people don't realize, you may sign this paperwork at the school, but your loan is going
to
somebody's bank.
It's underwritten by the bank. Yeah.
So,
The system's rigged. The system's rigged because the number one tax-paying percentage in the United States are college-educated people, right? Those are people who pay the most taxes in the United States. So if you get a federal student loan, boy, you're hedging your bets. Now you got you continue to get that $1 trillion a quarter tax debt you get every quarter at federal government because now you're also lending them student loan debt. And then on top of that, they're going to work. And then if they take a government job, there's this little trade-off, and there's all this legislation on what this present administration ran on that they might do student loan forgiveness. No, they're not going to hedge their bet. I mean, I've met people with $250,000 in student loan debt, 25 college degrees, making $40,000 a year. They're going to die owing them. There's just no way around it. And you have so many expatriates that they realize that in 2021, going to college is now a status symbol. It has nothing to do with education. Zilch.
Thank you. Thank you. That means in this era of name, image, and likeness, the compliance officer's job increases exponentially. The compliance officer now has to run interference for the people who are in charge, these student athletes, and has to play lawyer to stay one step ahead of those who would still punish. Because believe me, in spite of name, image, and likeness, they're still going to punish schools, and especially HBCU schools. So are the schools, are the HBCUs set up, and this is for everybody, to properly deflect the negative aspects of this and accentuate the positives of this?
You don't even have to finish the question. No.
And the answer, and the brothers, right, see, it's more complex. There's way more complexities than this because each state has their own set of laws. So if you go to LSU, their state taxation may not allow none of this bullshit. And then what are the tax consequences for you? You're going to be in tax debt and be in a tax situation well before you start. Well, you're getting a 1099, well, you had a scholarship. How are you claiming this income? And how are you writing it off? And how can you use it per se? No one's talking about that. And then also, if you're a student athlete and you pay in other states, and the money you're getting is associated with paying a student athlete, then you may have to pay taxes like pro athletes do in each state you play in and have to have a taxation regarding that.
Yep.
This is way more complex than this. Way more complex than that. I mean, professional athletes, if they play in Canada, right, they go to Toronto, hockey players, you know, all the countries in Canada have hockey teams, and then play in Florida and Tennessee or wherever it may be, they got to file with each one of these jurisdictions at their tax laws. So you got to have, yes, they do. So you better have a super accountant. So if you're a collegiate athlete and you're going to say, okay, well, my income is associated, like there's these two twin volleyball players I've seen at the front end is from Fresno State. And, right. You know, they got some kind of marketing deal because they have like, you know, I don't know, millions of Instagram followers. I don't know which social media it is, right? Mm-hmm. And so because of that broad bandwidth, they're able to get some kind of contract deal. The quarterback down there at the University of Miami, you know, signed something with a moving company, you know, in Miami to use his likeness. That's cheap again. You know, but what's the tax consequences? You can't. It's not W-2 income. It's 1099 in most cases. If it's W-2 income, now you're an employee, right? So you got to file. What's your write-off? What are you claiming? All of that bullshit.
Hold on. You're formally an employee now because before you were de facto employee. You were doing work, but you weren't getting properly compensated other than the so-called bogus education. So now this
or
does
leave
a whole
scholarship, the so-called scholarship, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, though, you have to be mindful of all these aspects. Okay, now I'm getting paid. Okay, so what are the responsibilities of getting paid? Come on now. We see it all the time with million-dollar athletes. A colleague, what's your write-off? You don't own no effing property.
Hello.
Okay, but Eric, here's my question, Eric.
I'm saying that the game is open, but you have to think about those parts as well. But go ahead.
Yeah. Mom and dad also got to check with their tax people too.
Exactly.
Remember, in what was in the last 48 hours, they've been talking about checks in the mail. It's some kind of tax credit for kids. My baby's 38 years old, so I don't even remember none of this stuff anymore.
Right.
Child tax credit. That's like $3,000 a year or $300 a month or something like whatever it is, and they're gonna prorate it. Okay, they're going to prorate it throughout the year. Okay, but how does your making money
impact that? Correct.
The bottom line for mom and dad. And see, all these things got to be factored in because, the good side of this is one of the things that has always hampered a lot of us because. We're more prone to want to be consumers, but we've never been really grilled in how to get into business. How many of these little white kids, you know, little white girl, the little black thing, the white boy did his little lemonade stand or whatever, and learned how to do business. White parents do business, got their kids queued in. These are the kind of things you need to do to do business. Well, here's the kind of things that you need to be doing to do business. And if you're paying close attention, you can walk out of college with a whole lot of money without a whole lot of debt the way a lot of people do. Because, like Eric was saying, I know people who came out of, I thought it was bad when I had like $12,000 in student loans. I know people who had more than 12. Well, matter of fact, it's $12,000 to go to school now. So you can imagine what their bottom line starts out with when they come out of
$100,000. If you're a doctor, a lawyer, or a educator with an MBA, you got student loan debt through the ceiling. Right? There's just no way around that.
Yeah,
I mean, you have student loan debt through the ceiling. And to your point, that's why people kind of tune in because, I don't want to get into this hurly-burly, are we getting our money now? It's finally even FUNC2A. Hello? The game's just begun because each state has their own tax laws. Is this interstate commerce? So, in other words, you go play, basketball-wise, you go to Alaska to play in that Anchorage holiday tournament, and now Alaska has their things, and you market it in Alaska, right? You did business in Alaska because you had logos on or you gave out some flyers and shit, but you're affiliated and associated with the school, so you generated commerce, right, over state lines, right?
Yeah.
So the thing is, there's so many way more intricacies involved. That's why, again, beware of the person bearing the gifts, because allegedly by opening this Pandora's box up, they are also seeing how they're still benefiting long term anyway.
Right. But Eric, here's my question. Now, we saw an injury with the player from Louisville some time ago in the championship.
Yeah, I remember.
Right. My question is that when it comes down to health, especially the insurance, how is that going to
work? There
we
go. That's very smart. Mm-hmm. I was going to talk about that because under Obamacare, you can carry children, mid-20s, right, on your insurance, right?
26, like Social Security.
Right. Okay, so in other words, when you start talking about health care, colleges, that you sign these disclosures, they don't really do the health care. You get injured, they're not going to pay $80,000 in medical bills for a student athlete. What kind of insurance did your mom and dad have? So when you file taxes now, and you're generating income, in this aspect, then is this employer who's promising you this money offering you health benefits? Hell no. Pathology 101.
Mm-hmm.
So the trade-off, you have to be, in other words, if there was someone who I knew, that move in those environments, these are the kind of conversations I have. Like, be careful who you link with. Be careful of what business you associate with. Are they going to dump on you? Because a lot of times, let's look at a tech firm, right? So some of these, Silicon Valley tech firms, they got millions of dollars. They can't even remember they made yesterday, right? And so, but they've got to move that money. It doesn't mean it's nothing to triage some of that and invest. They keep trying to find ways to move that money. So if they do a little small investiture, which they're not, but if they did and decided to do that per se, basically they're just dumping cash and creating a marketing plan under the guys that are helping out these poor little colleges and these guys who've been taking advantage of so long to have a little something-something. Bullshit, Crappus Manifestus 101, Pimpology 101. All money's not good money.
Mm-hmm.
You got to know how to filter and what to associate with and not lose your grind to get so because too many athletes I know got that money in the league. Oh, now it's payday. It's not my time. And 85% of them don't have it. So you've got to be measured, very measured.
Yeah. That brings me back to the point about the compliance officer. Now they would be looking to do things that would protect the school. But now the asset has become more important because now they got to protect the player. If Cheryl is a gymnast and she somehow broke her leg outside at a fast food restaurant for no accident of her own, it's the compliance officer's responsibility, as I understand it, to make sure there's no negative income or impact on her malady. That's not the way it was in school, and we used the case of the kid from Louisville breaking his leg in the tournament. The only reason he got repaired was because it was on national TV. It was basically a workman's compensation situation that they could not avoid themselves to walk away from.
All these, or GoFundMe's. I mean, so in other words, okay, here's a perfect case in point. And I've seen countless incidents like this over the years. I'll speak to one person. I knew someone who was a division, NorCal, top-rated tight end, right? You know, had a scholarship to Washington State, okay? So he is, graduation time. You know, they're playing, quote-unquote, grab ass, some catch football, dumb stuff outside, you know, on the fields and in street clothes, BSing around. So it could be taken that a jealous teammate who didn't have the same opportunity when he went up for a pass took out his knee. All right? Took his knee out.
Shit happened.
So now the scholarship signed. Took his knee out, and a principal at the school told me, said, you know, he called me coach. He said, hey, coach, man, it's bad, man. I've seen the knee. I don't see it shifting, man. It's bad. I said, really? You know, so Washington State tried to work with him, right? You know, like, okay, well, come up here. Nowhere near the same player. And they couldn't keep floating the scholarship. And this guy could have, he had a shot at the league because there's been many people at the school who went to the league. He was as good as an athlete as, or better than some of the ones who did. And I would see him in a lineman's jacket, you know, working the 9 to 5, you know, wearing the little vest, the bright vest. You know what I mean? Putting change in the machine to get dollars to cash in at the grocery store. Got family, got kids. This whole shit shifted because colleges are not picking that tab up. It's always the family and your personal insurance. Now, if you're a number one draft pick and you're going to be a lottery pick, the NCAA has a whole nother insurance policy for those athletes.
That's right. That Lloyd's in London.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 16 years
old. So in other words, if you are like, you know, there's a kid coming out that I love his story, and he played ball. He's from Fresno region, but then he played at one of these prep schools that was basketball specific. A colleague of mine's son also played there, who's now at Illinois. And Jalen Green's his name, right? So Jalen can flat get it as a basketball player. You hear me? I mean, it's almost like, if six guys are covered, he sees them as invisible, different, totally different when you see him get down, right? And his background is literally like rural Fresno, you know, because Fresno's a lot of farmland, right? You know, Central Cali, you know, a lot of agricultural. And so he could, you know, top pick. He'd go anywhere, right, as out of high school. But he went to the D-League for the 500K, right? So he went to the D-League, you know, got his half milli right out of high school. And he's going to either be he's going no lower than 3 in the lottery. To me, he should be 1. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But in his situation, and like I said, dude can get it. You know, this is someone you root for because he has one of these rare, organic, pure come-up stories. He didn't come up through all the whoredoms of AAU and pimping and side gift bullshit, right? I mean, so I love his story. I mean, it's legit as it gets. It's a throwback type deal, even in this crazy era. You know what I mean? But the kid can flat. Like I said, he can ball out. He's going to get his million. He's going to get. But see, how did he win D1, right? And got fucking hurt. His parental background, yeah, they may have took care of him surgically or he would have got some kind of coverage, but he won't be able to do that in the great majority of these colleges.
That's a great point to bring up. So what happens now to the insurance policies? Like Eric just said, if you're a very good one, a very good one, then you got Lloyd's of London watching your back. But what happens if you're still grinding? You've got your agreement in place, but you haven't gotten anywhere and put up any debts yet because you got hurt. Hey. What happens then?
Hey, Mike, real quick, Reg, I'm going to let you bounce up, but real quickly to that point, this is going to be real quick, Reg, so please hold your thoughts.
Yeah, no problem,
like,
no problem.
When the HBCU went and played Georgia University, that kid almost got killed.
Yeah.
I don't know what school that was.
Oh, the one
played.
That broke his neck. The one that broke his neck.
When they played,
he's in Georgia school, Georgia now.
Right, because Georgia did some of that good fellow lookout shit, right? which is what I'm talking about. But you got to get a broken neck to do so. But prior to that, all those freaking medical expenses was his people. It had to be on his people.
Yeah.
But they did the GoFundMes and all that shit. NC2A probably backdoored some shit because it was such a bad look. But universally, there's 95% of those type of deals all being covered outside of, and no one's ever the same because of insurance. Go, Reg, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Professor, once again, at HBCUs, how is this going to filter in with them, Professor, as far as the student athlete with the money? Because just face it, unless we're going to get Big Mama and them to get money in the socks or either have a partnership, you know, we got the underground. Hey, I'm just going to say in Virginia, we had the soup kitchen line, we had the bean line, and also certain restaurants. I can't say what schools, but it is what it is. So how's that going to affect our HBCUs?
Well, what's interesting about that, too, man, and, man, there's just so many damn layers to this type of stuff because let's look at, okay, crack, I can speak to this visually. I'm gonna sidestep names though. But the crack epidemic in Queens, New York, mid '80s. Yeah. Fat Cat, right, was one of these dealers out there. There's some other dudes too, called Supreme. All this stuff, 50 Cent and them, you know, make these tales about real people, man. Right? Who was like turning over?
Yeah.
I mean, and they were turning over dough left, right, front, and center, right? So check it out. I'm going to create some so-called people in the game's name, right? So you got this guy over here called Yayo Big, and you got this other guy over here called, you know, Making Money, and they're rivals, but then they have pickup basketball games, and they're paying for $50,000 winner-take-all, and they're getting all these D1 athletes, future NBA announcers, future professional players. This was all before all that came to place, to play on these teams and breaking them off cash after the game.
Hey, that's not
Lonzo
Mourning
at the university.
Hey, you know, you're talking about Lonzo Mourning in Georgetown.
Yeah. That was a little bit later. And so my thing being is one thing Spike got right in that whack-ass movie, He Got Game. Right. One thing he got a lot of little things right. One thing he got right is when Jesus Shuttleworth, a.k.a. Ray Allen, is at the bus stop, right? And, you know, people are bugging him.
Big time, the top
drug dealer with the white Benz blows up. And he's like, J-Man, you need a ride, man? I see these people sweating you. And he jumps in the car and they're like, yo, you know I'll take care of you. That's real.
Yeah.
That's real.
Yeah.
All throughout the United States of America.
Right, but going back to HG, Professor, how's that going to affect us, Professor?
I don't see where a whole lot's going to change. There's name recognition at all levels, depending on what the media is like in these specific areas.
Yeah.
Right now, the big deal, even better than that. About 4 or 5 years ago, there was this young man who went to the farm school named Cohen. He is in the NFL today because of videos they shot of him, you know, doing the standing flip and catching balls in both hands. Okay, he built his name recognition right there. And then he was able to go ahead and parlay it into going to the NFL. Unfortunately, we ended up with Chicago, where they don't bother blocking today much more than they did once upon a time when Sweetness was there. But, you know, when you look at kids who can do stuff like that, then there was a young man who used to go to Winston who was quite an artist. Now, to me, he was a good ball player. He was a great artist. He does graphic work and all that kind of stuff now, making gobs of money, doing what he loves. I mean, happy all the way to the bank. But while he was in college, he had to watch it because they say, you know, here's the kind of stuff you got to look at here. As a Division II ball player, he could take a summer job, but as a Division I ball player, he couldn't. Kids at Wake Forest, if they work, about the only thing you can do is go work at, say, the coaches camp, or the big one is in our area is one at Campbell University over in Buies Creek.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for those who don't know about Buies Creek, it's outside of Lillington. It's it's now Campbell has grown quite significantly since my nephew went there. But while they were there, there was no name recognition like you would think because, hey, there was no newspaper there. The Lillington paper came out once a week, and then the News and Observer and the Fayetteville Observer, they were kind of on the edge of each of those circulation.
Right.
So, you know, you had, on one hand, if they had been winning, they probably had a lot more coverage, but they really didn't do a whole lot of winning. So, you know, you're from Buies Creek. At that time, there was a flashing light that they really didn't even need. But, you know, it all depends on what these schools do to, one, promote their program, because if there's one thing that we have seen with this whole situation with Coach Prime is there are ways to generate visibility. Our schools have never bought totally into that. Our schools are more interested in promoting, hey, students who ain't doing nothing to really reflect on the school other than make A's, and then the president and in some cases and prominent alumni, but they don't do a lot of that either. And, you know, there's all kinds of things, but they have to be proactive in how they go out and do certain things. You know, I've been posting some things about from a certain school about these young ladies who were in the Olympics, because all we've heard in the last couple of months was, hey, you got these colored kids from these colored schools who are going to the Olympics. Wow. And they forget.
Mm-hmm.
That's old news. You know, was it 1960 that the whole 4x4, 4x100 relay team was from one school?
That's right.
Well, 80% of the women's track team was from one school. 80% of the United States women's track team was from one school. For those who are out there, that's the Tennessee State Tiger Bells. And so, right, I mean, there's never been a greater women's sprinter ever produced than Wilma Rudolph, right? And so, you know, we've had, you know, Flo Jo did her thing, you know, which is great, you know, but Wilma was the one that was the template that set it all off for everyone to follow. Correct.
And see, correct. What I'm trying to get across to people in a nice, subtle, kind way. Yeah, I mean, I'm happy for I'm happy for the guys. I think all four members of the 4x4 relay team from A&T are in the Olympics. Happy for them.
Mm-hmm.
There's about three or four guys.
Absolutely.
Happy for them. But this ain't nothing new. Matter of fact, I got interviewed by the Washington Post about a week ago, and I told the guy, I said, hey,
excellent.
1964, the person who finished fourth in the 110 meter hurdles was from Winston-Salem State. If his foot hadn't hit the hurdle and pushed his hurdle up, he probably would have won. But having said that, you know, again, I'm happy that A&T is that, you know, that limelight.
Wasn't Edwin Moses Morehouse?
Yes, he was.
Yep. Enough said.
74, 75, I think.
Gold medalist hurdler. Edwin Moses went to Morehouse.
He won in 76 as a student. And then in 80, he would have, when he went, had he gone in 80, he would have been graduated. But then he went in 84 and 88, I think 92. It didn't do too bad either.
No.
So,
Edwin Moses put it down in the 70s. Ralph Boston went to Tennessee State. He was a gold medalist in the long jump.
Yes.
Okay, now to the 60s. Yeah, but he's even pushing
that
56. Yeah, that's right, 56. Exactly, because that was my father's college era. They were boys. They were cool. So, yeah. So, I mean, you know, real quickly to, you know, to the Tennessee State thing real quick. I mean, you know, I mean, Ed Temple built the track with his bare hands to create the Tiger Belts, literally. He borrowed parts and went neighbor to neighbors and literally constructed a track where there was none, right, and to create Olympians off that track. So people need to mitigate their excitement because this revisionist history is not accurate.
We have Patrick Broad and we got Gary on the gray as well.
Since it's open the gas in the fire, Mike, listen to this real quick, Mike. There's a guy not having a track. Senog had produced over a dozen Olympians before they got, matter of fact, over two dozen Olympians at a time when they didn't have a football field or a track.
Wow.
They would go down to State School, high school, and do some work. But they did all the conditioning work.
I mean, yeah, going to local parks and shit. You know, I mean, going to the local park and shit. And developing
and
these type things. Yeah, I mean, so the respect that is casted about, and like I said, people weigh in on what we talk about far too often, so we know the impact is there. I've never lost confidence in that. So when we relay these messages, we want to say, yeah, we're proud. It's cool. You know, we're glad to see what's taking place. You know, however, this is not revisionist history. This has been set in cement way before today.
We have played this song before.
Hey, Patrick, your man Guy Newman got the Eldred Dix Award, man. He told me for you to get with him.
Yeah, well I call him New Baby.
He plays at Virginia Union. You know, he was at Richmond, but he went over at Union. Hey, I'll tell you some stories off the line. I got to lean on the chair. I can't say it public.
Johnny's a good dude. He was there when I was in the front office, and he married that fine, healthy chick on what's that treason that God about HBCUs, but series. Oh God, what's her name? But Debbie Allen directed. Anyway, Newberry was a good dude. Newberry. Well, you know, first of all, good to be with you guys again. And I just want to chip on and just to put a little song on the mail that you guys are talking about, HBU schools and track. And you guys know, way more than I do. I know some of them because some of the guys in Jersey City were involved on the track. And then I dated a woman that was on one of the Tiger Belts. But here's where the issue comes in. Issue comes in, it's not that it's old news, it's the fact that the producers and executive producers of these shows don't do anything else but talk about the same goddamn thing every day.
Thank you.
That's part of the problem. I was talking with one of my assistant producers today, and he's a big Green Bay Packer fan. And he says, well, you know, Pat, what do you think about Aaron Rodgers? What do you think about Aaron Rodgers? Aaron Rodgers somewhere is sitting and shit somewhere and wiping his ass. I don't know. When they sign him, call me. That's the problem. So much is going on in sports today that have relevance. Mm-hmm. That could be interesting that they don't talk about. They get the same four subjects. I mean, they pay you how much money, and this is the best thing that you can talk about every freaking day?
Exactly.
Part of the problem.
That's not accidental, though. You know what I mean? That's not accidental. That is microwave news, you know, because the attention span is so minuscule that these people literally don't do the research. Because when they do, it is incredibly powerful, and they can't even understand how it was even accomplished. When I speak to old news, it's always about for those who know. For those who know, it's old news.
Let me ask everybody this. How many times have you heard anyone in media say to that white first-round quarterback, that's too much money, or he's not earning it, or anything else to that thing? Ever. I've been talking for 30 years, and not once have I ever heard white boys making too much money, regardless. They ready to coronate Matthew Stafford, even though this motherfucker has not even won games.
Somebody was getting dressed, going to work, was saying, oh, right. They were talking about, and they were talking about Matthew Stafford.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was one of the white guys I like to enjoy listening to because he don't care. Jeff Saturday, I have a lot of respect for him because he will give you. He don't care, and he said, and they were quoting the stats much like you said about what the Rams can do because they got Matthew Stafford. He said, this is the problem with media in time. Stats don't really tell you what's going on. There's something
that's right.
7,000 yards, and he ain't made the playoffs yet. I said, wow.
Come on.
But you see,
shots fired.
Okay, it's real.
That's right.
But it's real. Again, it goes back to that micromanaging, producing, that this is what we're going to talk about. And you mean to tell me this is the best, and they're paying you how much goddamn money? You can't do better than that?
Come on. That's right.
Okay.
Patrick, finish the line. Not only do they pay you that much money, you have staff to help you do that.
Please.
And between you and your staff, you can't come up with no better than this?
That's right. Come on.
Ask Jim Caldwell. It cost Jim Caldwell his job in Detroit, and they ain't done shit since he left.
And they ain't done squat since.
And the ironic part about this, he won more games than the Jim Caldwell than anybody else. He had a winning record on the Caldwell. That's exactly right.
Where the hell is Wayne Fonts when you need him?
Oh, Fred Flintstone. Oh, Freddie Flintstone. And Yabba Dabba Doo.
Hello,
911. I'm sorry. I've been around too long.
911. I found a fugitive. He is in California right now, and that motherfucker is stealing money. You need to arrest this motherfucker right now.
Wayne Fonts shows up to practice, takes a look at the film, and says, good work, guys. 5 minutes later, practice is over.
Yeah, man. Please.
He done robbed the Rams.
I call welfare checks.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, you're out there in California, even though this is Southern California, what has the vibe been to Stafford being traded to L.A.? Or picked up as a free agent.
I'm in Northern California, so we don't get that much news.
I tell you, they don't care. Hey, look, Gary and I'm mad because the Oakland Athletics might be moving to Las Vegas. That's what y'all hot about.
Yes, that's serious.
Vegas was a done deal. Once the Vegas verbiage went up, that was a done deal. All those little counterplays and stadium shit, that was a joke. That was not taking place. That was done. Yeah, the moment the word that Vegas came. Well, speaking to the L.A. thing, you know, in terms of, like, you know, the quarterback, it all evolves around the Sean McVay alleged genius bullshit.
Yes,
right. That's what that revolves around. Goff was a NorCal kid. You know, he went to California. He was from NorCal. I seen him play prep. Yeah, I seen him play prep ball. He was tearing it up. You know, so he was, you know, naturally born. So bringing in Stafford, it's not so much Stafford as much as it's the Sean McVay can do it all wizard offensive genius thing.
Correct.
He knows stuff we don't
100%
know.
Correct.
The Rams are not going anywhere because of the play call.
Eric, let me follow up on that. What you said, that's profound, because quite frankly, if you don't produce something in the next 2 years, the Golden Boy is going to turn into Penny Boy.
Correct.
They will get rid of him because
you
expectation.
Go.
You see, this is not football or athletics of 10 more years ago, will it give you time, 3, 4, 5 years? Okay, the bad year. But, well, no, bruh. They've invested all that money in that stadium. They've been gone for a year. I mean,
they got that. Yeah, they have that new stadium, right? COVID's a little relaxed, so they can fill it up now. You know,
exactly.
They got that space. They got that spaceship in Inglewood that's drove out all those black families there. That's a whole other story. We won't get into. You were talking about the Rams and that stadium in Inglewood. In the words of the Dr. Dre Tupac song, "California Love," Inglewood always up to no good. They called that shit. Because that's basically what's popping right now in Inglewood in terms of a wondrous black community for a number of years. You know, the Lakers, that's where the Forum was for many years, right? In Inglewood, before they took Staples downtown. And now they've got this incredible super complex. So, you know, you got to preach to the L.A. thing. They already had the golden blonde boy Goff, so they replaced it with another. Those things are not accidents. Image.
One mediocre
SoCal,
one mediocre
Beach Boys, right?
Might have harder than he was. He was.
But it's about me. The Rams are about McVay, but it's really about Aaron Donald. You know what I'm saying? But they destroyed Todd. They destroyed Todd Gurley's career. And Todd Gurley's a good brother. You know what I'm saying? I mean, really good dude. You know, and Todd Gurley hasn't been the same since.
They assaulted him because they were playing the odds. A running back's career is going to average under 3.5 years. You know, a quarterback, well, he's going to average whatever they'll pay him for as long as they'll pay him. So when Gurley got to Atlanta, he actually lucked up because he went to a situation where he was comfortable and everybody was aware of his talent. So he lucked up there, and he would be able to get his vested once he passed that 4.6-year mark. But the bigger issue in all of this is that, Gary, you said yourself, you know, as you're living around Oakland, things may not be falling apart, but you can see the evidence of a possible ghost town because you see how much it's already cost them with the Raiders leaving. If the A's leave, what the hell will happen to Oakland?
If the A's leave, well, I think it's all right, that deal, because
Manfred
said this at the All-Star game. I was at Reggie Day, Josh Byers.
Yep.
Hey, Josh
Byers.
Yes, sir.
You know, because he comes to get your house in order or remember what you have there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the Warriors went across the bay to Frisco. So the Coliseum and the Oakland Arena, you know, or Oracle, as it was called in latter years, you know, were on the same footprint in Oakland, right off the 880, right? And so, but if there's ever been a stadium that needs to be detonated, it's the Oakland Coliseum. I mean, you talk about A's out, poor seating, narrow seating. I mean, you're going to lose 20% on your batting average with those lines there, right, between the dugouts and the field. I mean, Herschel Walker wants to get held to the rock so he can tear up some of that green. You know what I mean? There's so much there outside the lines where on the foul ball tips. But Coliseum has seen its love. I mean, the Raiders was the last team still playing on a dirt infield because they shared the stadium.
That's true.
My board worker there, Mars Bradshaw, Sturgeon.
The Oakland City Council. See, I put this squarely on the city of Oakland. They want to save money. They want to save money. And see, this is the battle. The battle is they're going to build 3 condominiums and 20 doors underneath the condominiums. They're also building a ballpark. They're also building a gondola ramp. You go from Gondola to the stadium, which I think is ridiculous. But here we are, gondola, $1 million on a new gondola when you have
I mean, the location. One thing about the Coliseum, you know, like many of the older stadiums in the past, it was built like, you know, what is now considered that, you know, the hood, right? I mean, it's right off the strip, I mean, to get to the stadium.
That's right.
Exactly. I mean, it's right there. But on the flip side to that, in terms of Bay Area sports, that's why the Niners pushed down to Santa Clara, because Candlestick was also something that needed to be and thrown away. And they built down in Santa Clara, but they lost a little bit. And then these new owners of the Warriors, you know, they'll probably never win again. So they went for the cash. They went for the dough. They built it off the wharf, right, down there in San Francisco, the so-called Barbary Coast and shit, Jack London lore, and sure, Sammy Davis Jr. and Eartha Kitt and shit, and that flick they played in and shit, you know, right down there off that strip, you know. And so in that area and region, they tried to incorporate Oracle. You know, I'm always was fond of Oracle. Nothing bumped and bounced like that place.
Right.
Know, but nothing. That was beautiful. I mean, I loved that arena. And then when they did the redesign there, yeah. Yes.
Eric, look. This is going to be simple. This is going to be a simple solution to this.
Right.
Move the team to Fremont, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Fremont right there. There. And at the angle of the Barton.
Right.
Barton station right there.
Well, in terms of the Warriors moving to where the stadium where they're at, that's one of the stories I tell all the time when people talk about players make too much money. What did they buy? $450 million. Miles was about almost six billion.
They paid for
themselves. Only part the government got into was to build the roads. Now, look at it this way. You have to also understand. I explained to somebody who was going crazy because the guys make too much money. I said, "You think that's the only business those guys have? Really? So what they're doing with that $6 billion? That's money in their pocket.
Exactly.
Well, you know what, Patrick? Well, that speaks. Well, you're right, and that just speaks to the fact that, you know, the billion-dollar brain does not understand the million-dollar brain, and the million-dollar brain doesn't understand the thousand-air brain, and the thousand-air brain doesn't understand shit.
Yeah. Eric, I want to drop a pearl on what Eric said about the quarterback in L.A. Notice that the two biggest markets who have longed to have a image maker at a position in a game that represents the team and in the area, it's in L.A. and in New York.
Yeah.
Got that right. And that's what Jerry Buss of the Lakers totally understood. You know, that's why Pat Riley was on there with the Armani suits, and he wanted to create the Showtime, and he broke out the Laker girls, and he had Magic pushing the ignition, and, you know, they had that thing going on. But it's image conscious down there. You know, that's why when I knew Mike Brown got the job with the Lakers, I was like, my goodness, Mike Brown's a good coach, but he's not going to fit the image.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, image-wise, Patrick, let me ask you, because this has been brought up again. Ever since name, image, and licensing has been put into effect for student-athletes, now other brothers are coming out of the closet. Terrell Pryor says, forget that shit. I signed my drawers over for somebody, and it almost got me suspended. Then they had the nerve to say, put that nigga in a game because we can't win without him. And that's exactly what happened. He won the game. He's the MVP, but he was still a nigga. And he had a mixed career in the NFL because he wouldn't convert to wide receiver. But Pryor talked about reinstating wins for Ohio State and other issues because of what happened to him. And I'm asking, do you think there'll be a rash of more of these that'll come in the midst of all this NIL stuff?
You must have been thinking into my conversations I've had the last 24 hours with some knuckleheads that who are alumni at the university like I am. Well, you know what? I said, wait a minute. He deserves to get it back. Well, you know, he broke the law. Wait a minute. The young man sold his golden pants, which they went after Michigan, right? He sold them, got tattooed here. But he also had almost $1,700 to give his mama so she could get heat and stay in an apartment. But a lot of that going on. But the point is, going on now with in terms of licensing and what players got, that's peanuts to what these guys are going to make already. Like I told you, the brother in Jackson State already got some money from a barbershop distributor. He going to make the money already in Jackson State. My point is, you got people who are locked into what's right based upon what they feel comfortable with because it hurts the image of what they think is important to them. It's not. Pride's right. Reggie Bush is right. All that stuff is going. They're just legalizing what they've been doing for years. If that's the case, let's revisit some of this stuff because it ain't right. But they want to fight it because they want to keep that aspect of we want to keep the dignity of the game. My ass.
Hey, Patrick, let me ask you about today, the USA versus WNBA All Star game. You had my girl Dawn Staley coaching U.S. versus I think Lisa Leslie was coaching the WNBA women's pro game. How powerful an image was that of two black women on the sideline coaching that game today? And it was a pretty interesting game.
You know, I miss covering the WNBA, really. I ain't going to Brooklyn to cover them. I went to the Garden doing it. I ain't going to Brooklyn doing that. But I'm happy for them because I've interviewed both ladies, very professional, on the case. They know what they're doing, and they represent what can be done with enlightened people for a league to uplift the league with good play, and not only image, but people who know the game. As we know so many folk coaches who don't know the game, at least. But I think it sets well for the league. My only issue with the WNBA, they are grossly underpaid. Grossly.
That's an understatement.
I think the Milwaukee Bucks are going to lose this playoff because of stupid coaching. They are. They're going to lose this playoff because of stupid coaching.
I beg to differ. I seem to remember there's a young man who's a student at Winston-Salem State who's on the other team. They're going to win.
Okay. Look, when you have a 15-point deficit, and you go in the locker room, and then you come out of the locker room and don't change anything, that's stupid. I'm sorry. That is really stupid.
Coaching acumen is overrated in the NBA. If there's ever been a sport that's player dominated, it's the NBA.
I agree.
You know, I mean, Wes Unseld, real quickly, he was an outstanding. I mean, I watched him coach outstanding games. He just didn't have the horses. Mm-hmm. You know, he just did not have the horses. And so the NBA is all about, you've got to have the guys, man. And that's why you can make, I mean, some of these coaches that you will see, like coach some of these teams and get lucky, luck up and win an NBA Finals, right, or get to an NBA Finals. And then you sit around and talk to some basketball X and O's with him. You're like, fuck, I mean, does he know anything? You know, so it's really player-driven for the NBA. So a guy like Budenholzer, he's got a bunch of, they got 9,012 assistants. They got scouting technology. Yes. Which makes you wonder how you could ever lose a game. There's nothing you can't dissect. There's nothing you can't see. And they still go on 8, 9, 10, 12-game losing streak. So if you see an NBA team going a losing streak like that, that is the wackest coaching that you can imagine because they have got a zillion opportunities to create an alternative game plan. They just don't have the acumen.
Yep. Eric, you're awfully kind with your words there. Because, see, I learned this from observing college coaches, but coaching in general, because when I do occasionally go to high school games, I see the same thing. there's a certain look that coaches get, and they do one of two things. They stand there like the deer in the headlights,
yeah.
or they go off on a player. Either way, though, this look comes upon them like, what the hell are they doing now? Because yeah. it's telling you, even with assistance, and they probably and these are situations that occur usually when say they got a bunch of yes men instead of assistants who would tell them the truth.
That's true.
Well, and they hire people that can't take their job. Right,
yeah,
and so Lloyd Pierce's mistake in Atlanta was hiring Nate McMillan, which he did not know that the first time it didn't look like Nate was going to get the job and shit. You know what I'm saying? You know, I mean, so Nate just knew he was just mad. Nate was just marinating, man. He went to the he.
Mm-hmm.
They said, Nate, you know you can air fry it. It's not Nate said, nah, man, put it in the boiler, man. I'm going to marinate this baby. You know what I'm saying? And hey, we're about to give you the reins, Nate. You ready? So he was the head coach in waiting. From like day one, but no, I mean, what's that dude that used to coach the Brett Brown? My goodness gracious! I mean, he was horrid.
And see, some of these guys get these jobs because they got friends in high places.
Oh yeah, cronyism 101. Oh, absolutely, cronyism 101.
You know, between cronyism and nepotism, you always end up losing. Because because everybody, you see these coaching decisions now made on this thing called pedigree. It's like you're talking about. It's like, well, he was trained under Mike Krzyzewski. Yeah. He was a point guard for Mike Krzyzewski for 4 years. Yeah, but he only
Wojciechowski at Marquette.
I saw it up close and personal.
Johnny Dawkins, you know, he was out here at Stanford for a minute, and I was still trying to figure out what game Johnny was watching.
So I'm not the only one who said, okay, these guys are about 3 moves behind the other team, and that's all it takes. 3 moves behind the other team.
I mean, look at Calipari, right? Calipari, the moment he can't get – you know, blue chip supreme athletes, right? Back to the system and back to the players carrying you.
Thank you.
So Calipari, right? Calipari is like the perfect example because he lost all those number one picks. I think that's the Carl Towns team, right? Towns from Jersey. I know his dad real cool, Patrick. You know, Carl Towns.
Yeah, good dude.
Yeah. We go back, man. So if you see these brothers, tell them I said, what's up, man? But, yeah, so I go back to his dad way back when we were like, you know, balling and shit, right? And he coached at Piscataway High for a number of years, right, Pat? He was there for
mm-hmm,
many years.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. Good dude. Rest in peace to his lovely wife. They had a lot of COVID fallout, which was horrible mm-hmm. for their family, you know, so respects there. But in that situation, he lost all those guys to the draft, right? Devin Booker was coming off the bench for that Kentucky team, man. He's an all-star player in the finals. He wasn't even starting. He was loaded. Loaded ain't the right word with Calipari had. The next year he lost some dudes, and he ended up in the MF and NIT and lost to Duquesne in the first round.
He was so loaded. He was so loaded that if you forget, he told the kid, I got a whole new crop coming in. You got to get
He'd always threaten them. Y'all don't get down. Fuck it. I got some other shit for you. Exactly.
Yeah, that's called a transfer portal now. That's what that's called.
And then the next year or 2 years later, I can't recall the time frame, and I'm not going to look it up, he was in the NIT and lost to Duquesne in the first round of the NIT, which means the not-in tournament.
And my years with Calipari, I know Cal. Cal's a salesman. Cal's a mm-hmm. salesman that can sell basketball. I give him credit because he knows how to sell the game. He knows how to get the right people around him. I mean, just like, but the difference between him in my man Al McGuire was. Al McGuire.
Al could coach it up.
I could coach. I was not an X and O guy, but Al knew how to coach the game, particularly in game adjustments. Now,
well, you know, Al went to the block to get his players, right?
Oh yeah,
you know,
yes,
Butch Lee,
yes,
and my man, my man, you know, brother from Uptown, man. I can't remember Sam Worthen, Sutton Sam Worthen. Sam Worthen. You know what I'm saying? But he was there, you know, Bo Wellis. He got those brothers from back around the way because he could relate to the brothers. He knew where the bread was buttered.
How much money got passed around with him?
Much. I mean, going to Milwaukee and Marquette University. Or Al was taking care of him through the pipeline.
He made more money coming off because we got Tony McClain in the mix. When they won the championship, Al McGuire said, "Play my number 527." And fucking 527 came out the next day. Everybody got paid.
The vernacular he brought into that through his broadcast, the word "the paint" comes from Al McGuire.
Mm-hmm.
From his broadcast. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But the terminology "the paint" came from McGuire, from the broadcast level. Yes.
And a lot of white guys try to copy that, but they can't. But
no,
Al
McGuire, he was raw.
He was
raw.
He was genuine. He was what he was because he knew the streets, he knew the neighborhoods, and he was not afraid. He didn't go there once a week. He went there all the time, and people knew him. He didn't need a go-between guy because he recruited two guys from Jersey City. So, and the thing about it, what Al McGuire did, Marquette was okay, but who wants to go to Marquette in the wintertime unless you got something going on?
Yeah, that's right.
Come on now.
That's right.
Well, you know, I was selling to the brothers that they were going to get more than cheese and some, you know,
you got that food,
more than cheese and some damn Milwaukee ale and shit.
Yeah,
I got a problem with it, which is why I got no problem with when Pride says, "Give me my records back." I got no problem.
Yeah,
I got no problem with any of them either, my brother, because Al could show up to the Rucker and recruit and get love. And he didn't need a bodyguard.
Thank you. 100% correct.
Exactly right.
100% mm-hmm. correct.
So we got Tony playing the mix as well.
My major problem with Al was he was one of the ones who would never give Coach Mack credit for the four corners. He was always somebody.
None of them did.
But he was one of the ones who basically pushed the button more than anybody about how great Dean Smith was. And Dean Smith almost killed the game with the way he ran the four corners.
It was horrible. Yeah, star ball and shit. Phil Ford there dancing in France for 20 fucking hours. That was not the four corners. It really was a 1-4 flat. So an NBA play is like, okay, real quick, a 1-4 flat is when, okay, last few seconds, every two people go to the corner, the two wings go to the outside. The floor is balanced, mm-hmm. two on each side. The point guard has the middle, and he goes one-on-one, 1-4 flat. That's the so-called four corners. The NBA still uses a version of the four corners. It's just called 1-4 flat. And so the 1-4 is still the most epic offense and explosive offense you can run. That's what the Warriors run when they were ripping shit in half. They were running that 1-4 set. No, McGuire couldn't give up the love. Billy Packer could to Coach McClendon. You know what I'm saying? And many of those coaches. But one thing I can say about Coach McClendon and props and the people that came from that era, and I can say this to the core of my being because I've seen it, they didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Because they did not. So they did. Even to this day. Hey, man, that's great. That's some bullshit. We're going to the Hall of Fame. Coach Mack been dead, you know, this many years. That's some token shit. I don't need that. Me and my peers know how nice we were. By the way, you know, people can't acknowledge, that is cool, I do like that, but that's a different core of brother. They live in a different century, mindset-wise, for prop shit. They don't need gratification from anyone to elevate their stock, and that's how, if any of us as responsible parents or leaders or mentors, that's what we teach. And see, Nolan Richardson had a big faux pas that bothered me when I read an article on him. So Nolan Richardson was, you know, running Arkansas, you know, head coach,
yep,
off a national championship, kicking it with, you know, what's that guy's name? William Jefferson Clinton, right? His buddy, this, that, right? His buddy and shit, right? Which is cool. William Jefferson is showing up at his games and stuff, and, you know, and he's on this level. So you got this coach, and to someone who's looking for the hype and all those strings, you know, kicking it with the President of the United States. Now, you know how many posers would love that stuff, right? And this was nothing to Nolan. But he complained. Despite all his accolades, he won a National Junior College Championship, right? He went to the WNBA, started coaching a women's team overseas. He coached a little bit, you know, in the pros a little bit. He was complaining about acceptance. And I was like, acceptance from who?
Exactly.
Robert, you are decorated. You really mean to tell me it's coming down to that? And they will pimp you out. So, and so Coach McLendon's mentality and his players' mentality that I can speak to from my information would be, we're never going to open up a window where we need your validation so you can keep not validating us.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
I like that. That's
yeah.
Shit.
And you're right. And too much that's going on today. I
that's
have,
wisdom.
Have,
now that's wisdom. We don't need your validation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is what it is.
Don't
like it. Don't watch.
Can you hear us?
Yeah, guys, I apologize for being late. I was out shopping with Rob Manfred.
Man, that's the longest sandwich you've ever made, T-Man. What did you make, a six-foot sandwich over there?
Eric, I was actually shopping for pajamas with Rob Manfred. That's why I was so late tonight, so I apologize.
I thought you'd say you were shopping for pajamas with Kim Kardashian, but I'll pass.
No. She already took mine. So you know what are you gonna do?
What were those guys doing out there with their drawers on and the fucking also in the baseball game?
Let's look.
That is too
as me and the 15 other black baseball fans of America try to talk about stuff. I've got no goddamn clue what that was last night. I barely. If it wasn't for the dreads, I wouldn't have even recognized Vlad Jr. But you know, it is what it is.
Buzzers in the All Star game playing yesterday. I know that much.
Tony, let me tell you what I think what's going on, and I'll connect the dots to what they announced during the game. We all know announced during the game that the MLB is going to give $150 million to diversify the game. Yes. Now. Yeah, they want to go through high schools. They want to get black kids playing baseball again. So,
Patrick, I'll believe it when I see this because when I hear diversity, I don't hear black. I hear I hear Japanese. I hear Korean. I hear
Dominican,
Puerto Rico. And you know what? I don't have a problem with that, but see, don't try to sell it as something that it isn't. You know?
Patrick's right, though. I mean, you know, Patrick's right. They are going to push that envelope because, like anything else, one thing Stern did really well, you know, in terms of how he was, you know, pimping the NBA as far as Pimp Stern could take it. Commissioner Stern. Commissioner Stern, Hardy Har. You know, what he was pushing that envelope was that he really had to, you know, kind of create that bandwidth, you know, to kind of tap into those dimensions that you're talking about. So, yes, Stern knew that if you don't get the media coverage, you don't stay in the news, if you don't get notes and dictation and constantly create that, there's no one's interested.
Any news is good news. Bad,
correct,
good,
correct. Stern was epic with that, right?
Sure. If they're not talking about you, then they don't care. And that's been his whole thing.
And see, with baseball,
no one's even talking about.
So baseball still does well in little leagues, but the basketball thing has been pushed so hard with
that's
the year-round tournaments, the 7-on-7 football, and it's really easy to do. You don't need no mitts and shit. You don't need no bats, no diamonds.
Sure.
Around my way, when I see the baseball fields being used, remember when we were young, we could get a 6-on-6 game and shit, or 3-on-4 or whatever the hell, and be out there, stickball and shit behind a commercial building? Nowadays you can't. Nowadays you just can't
hard,
get the pickup game
in a hard wall, and that would give me the opportunity to work on my slow curve or whether they were hitting 400 feet.
Well, around my way, when I see the baseball fields being used because of the indigenous overflow in the country these days, they're playing cricket.
The East Indians
got major cricket tournaments popping.
Or as Patrick said, soccer. But now
that's right. They're playing cricket and soccer on those same fields.
And the thing is, now thankfully there are still some majority black little leagues. You know, we have a little league here in New Haven, the Walter Pop Smith League. They've been around for like 50 years. I know up where Reggie plays, there's leagues that have been around for like almost 65, 75 years. But, you know, let's put it this way. It's, again, the numbers, you know, and I'm not even going in like, you know, the whole numbers of, you know, players on teams and what have you. I've already, in a sense, given up on that. But I don't think you're ever going to see sort of the popularity that it had, say, during the time we were growing up. And last night was another example. Now, it was a great tribute for Hank Aaron last night, you know, and everything you know, having his wife
Ray
in.
But as we
refer to the Butt Sisters again, we all understand why I was taken out of Atlanta. But that would have played so much better if it had been Milwaukee. It seems like they were pushing home run derby more than they were the game. You know, but the thing is, if they really were going to honor Hank last night, he should have been in one of his hometowns. I mean, you can't get much more hometown for Aaron than Milwaukee or Atlanta. Now, the fact that you walked out of it. The fact that you walked out of Atlanta and didn't even consider Milwaukee. I mean, not now. I don't know the other things around. Maybe Milwaukee couldn't do it in time or what have you. I'm not sure. Whatever. Huh?
They thought the Bucks were going to be playing.
But Brett Favre was hosting, you know, a shindig, you know, in Green Bay during that time frame.
There you go. Or either there was a cheese eating contest in Green Bay, one or the other. So
fear the deer.
It leads back to the uniforms to which it was a ploy, and their ploy to try to typicalize to get kids interested, not the uniform, to the game.
I meet them halfway. It was nice to see the home team wearing white after watching the game tonight, but could one of y'all just wear home whites and road grays or greens
Milwaukee is in home whites tonight. You know, as a coach, you order uniforms, and we all know the identity of the uniform. Coach McLendon was on that too, right? The Globetrotters, right, with the candy stripe sweats, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and there's distinction. You know, the Knicks of the 70s, those home whites were tight. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then when they hit the road, they had orange bottoms and blue tops, right? That was a look of distinction. And so uniforms are always a look of distinction for sports, and it matters a lot. But
and
nowadays, it's about the marketing and getting what you can, per se.
Yes. And see, and with the All-Star game, when you watch the All-Star game, you know, I always harken back to the 71 All-Star game, you know, Vida Blue
yes.
versus Doc Ellis. But see,
yes.
the thing is, seeing your guy, whether it was whatever team you play, seeing your guy basically represented the uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
true.
And you know, to your point, T-Back, the A's had 7 All-Stars, and they all wore 7 different combinations of those uniforms.
Yes.
Yes.
75.
Yes. All players wore a different combo. The green
exactly.
top, white bottom, all yellow, all white, right? They just blended
sure.
all green. All their different uniform combos that each player wore the different combos.
Yeah. Last night, Kelly Green.
Yeah,
last
Kelly Green. And gold.
Last night was basically Hitler Youth with the Crayola crayon.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and you have Shohei Ohtani pulling what Babe Ruth used to do in the regular. What's new?
Let me go into that, Eric. Oh, I got into a discussion with my favorite book. About Ohtani and when what's the guy to get, you know, I respect him, but I went on because we had a conversation because that was playing he's the son of he's one of the Goodfellas, owns a small store for years, he was an excellent baseball player, but the point was we're talking about the guy he spent Ohtani. And he said, well, Ohtani represents is a mark of baseball as the best playing baseball. I said, really? I said, Ohtani might be, but Babe Ruth wasn't. He said, well, what issue was? I said, I said, only when Babe Ruth played against the brothers. Oh, he did play against the brothers in Cuba, and they ran his butt back home. So,
yeah.
Sure did.
And you know what? I'm gonna do something that I thought I would never do on this earth. I'm going to defend Screamin' A because let's be 2,000% here. He said out loud what white journalists are saying behind the scenes.
Yes.
You know, if you all remember the great joke from the 1980s, who were the best non-English speaking players in baseball? And of course, the answer is Fernando Valenzuela and Steve Carlton at
correct.
The time.
And Bill Lee.
Bill Lee spoke to the press. That was his problem. He probably talked too much. But the thing is, look, baseball would be foolish not to quote unquote push Ohtani because it gives them the best of both worlds.
Yes.
It gives them the market that, you know, gives them the outside market that they have. And it will attract it attracts, it's going to attract, because see, all these sports try to get the lay fan. Even if somebody hasn't watched a baseball game all year, they would have watched last night. I can't see what they're talking about with this Ohtani guy, if nothing else. But see, here's the thing. What's so funny about the whole Babe Ruth comparisons, here's the deal. Did Babe ever play both positions in an All-Star game? I'll wait.
Well, no, I mean, no, not at all. But what you can do, though, there's been players in a single game that's played like 9 positions for marketing and ticket sales. Right. I mean, so in other words, the All-Star game's a fucking sham. You know, it was set up a certain way. But I want to speak on, I'm not going to use names, I want to speak on the commentary. And I find the commentary of, you know, one, I don't body shame, right? If a person has, if that's their body, that's their body. Right? You know, this person over here, I mean, Ichiro to me is, you know, way better player, but he didn't pitch. But the arm he had, he might have been pretty good a pitcher as
well.
Maybe short relief.
And he's done some mop-up stuff and
that's
and
my point.
It's the price of pride.
In the same game. It's not a starting pitcher, but this is the first year Ohtani put it together. But to the commentary, we live, you know, for the short-sighted, you know, again, back to the words of MLK, when you open your mouth, you tell the world who you are. That speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm.
There's
mm-hmm.
no way around that. We live in a global world set. We don't live in a microscopic realm where, you know, you have the kind of things like that.
Wow.
So to talk to someone's diction or language or whatever it may be, and then use the Nigerian basketball team who kicked USA's ass and make fun of the African brothers' names, and they're insulted and they're, you know, bombing that as well. It's been a faux pas week where, again, if you open your mouth, you show the world who you are. Speak to the person's skill. It's not your job to determine the marketing. It's not your job to determine, you know, who should be the face of baseball, this, that, and the other. Last I checked, I don't see him as the face of baseball. I see him as an outstanding player and have a very good year. It was low. It was unintelligible. It was highly irresponsible. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, we work with people all the time that you meet them where they are. If they need an interpreter, that's it. You never said that shit about Yao Ming. You know what I'm saying? We should never have an author that has it. And I'll never pull a guy off the carpet the way they go in on the brother when they say get off the weed. So what were you on when you made those fucking statements?
Here's the thing. It speaks to the xenophobic history of this country over the years when it's someone non-white. Mm-hmm. But see, it also speaks to the ignorance. But it speaks to a different sort of ignorance on Screamin' A, because he felt like his cachet was good enough that he could get away with that.
I agree with, and he's been getting shredded. I watched, I seen a thing on the YouTube. I can't stand to watch any more than just that. And he got into a debate with some dude, Jeff Passan's his name, P-A-S-S-A-N, Jeff Passan.
Jeff Passan
shredded him. And he's not an A-list player, but he knows he's got a little more cachet, maybe up between the ears. Arrogance, you know the old saying, a fool and his money is soon departed, because it's a miracle they got together in the MF in the first place.
To piggyback on something you said before, it's better to say nothing and have people think you're a fool than to open your mouth and leave no doubt.
One last quote to that. Brother Malcolm said this: a smart man can always play a fool, but a fool can never play a smart man. To me, that's self-evident on this one.
Yep.
I mean, the dude is playing baseball. He's not running for office. He's not running for office, and he's putting in work, major work, work that hasn't been seen around this way. His diction, his language, and how he communicates to the media is none of your MFing business for you to decide what the face or face is not. So you were out of bounds with that. And again,
it's to no surprise, it's the sport of baseball that mm-hmm. wants to play this mm-hmm. race game. Because remember, the gentleman's mm-hmm. agreement and everything else. But I don't see
the baseball thing as a race game as much as I just think it's a humanity common sense thing
from my standpoint, Eric, I hear what you're saying, but I look at the history of baseball, and
I can't refute that, right? We can go there. I'm speaking exclusively to the commentary, not the fallout from MLB and their perspective at all.
To your point, I was right with you on your point.
But I'm really keeping it itemized to the person's comments strictly.
I want to make that clear. I think, again, when you realize the history of race in this sport and how it's been used in over the years, it's a factor. And again, I'm not refuting what you're saying. Just on his comments alone, it just shows you that he puts the stew in stupid. But when you play into,
can I have some onions with that stew and a little carrot?
Eric, I'll even give you all my Stu Gilliam records. How about that? To run with all of that.
I hear you, brother.
I feel this moment calls for inspiration from the brethren, the aboriginals, the homeboy, yes. So I will spend the next minutes in reflection as I send a long distance call to the brothers for some wisdom.
Yeah.
Zulu.
Those who would give their lives in battle when they fought on the field that next day. We got brothers who are fighting and sisters who are fighting everywhere on several fronts. And they're fighting foes foreign as well as domestic. And the theaters of battle go from the courthouse to the print house to the locker room throughout the society. You know, we don't give much credence to it because we're so busy trying to get other shit done. But I felt it was necessary at this time to recognize all the brothers and sisters who are handling this and trying to keep us as we are now and have us evolve on to the future. So forgive my introspection in those 2 moments. I want to get back to work and get everybody the last thought and remind everybody that no matter what we do, how we do, we are not alone. We're not alone because we've been out here fighting this shit, because the ancestors before us have been fighting this shit. And what my man said in that movie, we've been pimping since been pimping since been pimping. So having said all of that, final thoughts, please. Reggie, if you would, lead us off.
Again, I'm just so proud of Brother Johnny Newman getting the Elder Diggs Award. This brother has been out here fighting for a long time. Yeah, he went through the burning sands over at Virginia Union. But the University of Richmond dealing with those racist-ass Barry Goldwater conservatives was enough back in the day. I mean, you want to talk about some crap he went through at Richmond. Oh, my God. That's an understatement. Again, I would say what I said before. Lisa Leslie and my girl Don Staley coached today in the ladies all-star game. The ladies have come a long way. They're underpaid. Yes, they have. And all I got to say is that I don't know what's going on in this NBA Finals, but if things don't grab this one, Chris Paul and the CIAA might have egg on our face, because I got a bad feeling if they don't get this, Milwaukee won't steal one on the road.
Well,
hey, you know, the series doesn't start until the home team loses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Professor, please honor us with some wisdom.
Well, first of all, I said all of what I said about Chris Paul, that he played there as a player. I have cool respect for him. His dad and his uncle, they wore the red and the white, and they're cool. I don't know what his problem was, but anyway. You know, it was funny. We were getting ready for the Olympics, and I touched on it a little bit before. But it hurts me to know, Ian, that to hear the people from the HBCUs going like it could never happen before. And all too often, we forget that a long, long time ago, all them girls and guys you see went from LSU or for Alabama or for Carolina, Duke, wherever you want to name. Today, we weren't even allowed on campus, and this was in our lifetime for most of us.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I'm not that impressed. I give what they do, but I'm not all that impressed that, to some small degree, that some of the guys and girls are coming back home. I see the young lady from A&T is going to be turning pro. Well, just think, the young lady from Livingston College.
Yep.
For those who don't know, this girl was barely recruited out of high school. And now she's the number one 400-meter woman in the United States and one of the best in the world. And roughly 10 years ago, when she was getting ready to come out of high school, what did they say? Oh, you're not even good enough. You're not even good enough to be a walk-on.
Come on.
Wow. Look at that,
Miss Wu.
And you know, she. And see, that was why I started when I was hearing these things, and I was interviewed by this guy from the Washington Post, and I think he got on my nerves for his lack of knowledge. And so I think I got on his nerves by telling him stuff that he didn't really want to hear. because that the approach was that, oh, I got this scenario, you just need to verify it. And I'm thinking, you know, the only thing I hate about it was telling him the story about how the Tiger Bells had to go in the cornfield and pee because they couldn't go into restrooms along the way. And I remember talking to Coach, and he was with a couple of his girls. And he says, "Oh, go ahead." He said, "They doing that, they'll talk to you." So I had a chance. And I mentioned that this whole, oh, no, you can't tell our story without telling that, because I want the people to know what we, you know, what we really went through. And I say, you know, and here we are now, being able to tell the story. And fortunately for me, one of the Tiger Bells, Kathy McMillan, I was in her hometown yesterday, down in Rayford, North Carolina. Just although she was far more, she was the best long jumper and one of the best sprinters in the state at the time. She came through with flying colors and went on and won silver medal. But either way, you know, what you see now come out of these colleges, these HBCUs, that's nothing new. We've done it before, and we've done it in some cases a lot bigger because we were better. But anyway, you can get in touch with me on blackheritagereview.com or on Facebook.
There you go. www.blackheritagereview.com, where we get to tell our own stories. Patrick?
Over the last year, the numbers of visuals because of various platforms have been reduced, and there's perception that within that some of the demise of the league has gone and been reduced with that. But confirmed back in March, the NFL signed a 113 billion-dollar broadcast deal, along with the rights with renewed with Twitter, which will have 20 spaces on Twitter, and that was the first one they did was 2013. And the Sunday ticket, which I love, where you see all the games, is now being bid between Apple and Disney to sponsor the whole thing. I was told this by a friend of mine, a guy worked with Ron Vick, but also confirmed by another guy named Jay Brunson, who works for a company called Goldman Sachs. Of course, they did the deal. Guys, football's going to make stupid money this year.
That's called having. That's called rigging the Super Bowl so Tom Brady can cash him out.
There you go.
Pimp down.
Eric, you already started this. Finish it, brother.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, nice reference to Kathy McMillan. I knew Kathy. We were there at TSU at the same time, as well as Chandra Cheeseburger. He was on that 84 Urban team.
Yes, Lord.
Tennessee State Chandra. We called her Cheese.
Chandra was the last Tiger Bell.
Chandra Cheeseburger and Kathy McMillan. So, Cheese was cool, man. Yeah, Cheese. Yeah, we got stories on Cheese. Where you at, Colonel, Mr. Richard? I'm sorry. But that being said,
the views expressed on Sultry Radio are not necessarily of the
–
but they're usually pretty right.
Yeah. Thank you for that. What happens in Nashville stays in Nashville. So, always a great corresponding with the brothers. So a couple of things. So Milwaukee Bucks, right, there's a sister named Valerie Daniels Carter, who is out of Lincoln University of Missouri, HBCU, who's a co-owner of the team, of the Milwaukee Bucks. HBCU's making presence with the ownership routes there with the sister there. She made her money in the fast food industry, and so she got a piece of the Bucks. Well done. TSU news real quickly. Tennessee State is in the modem right now to become the first HBCU to have both a men's and women's hockey team. And they're working with the Nashville Predators to do so. So they're going to put together a hockey team, first HBCU to have a full, and then no chump change, full-fledged hockey team. Brought it up 27 seconds left. Pay attention to that. So TSU's all in, D1, HBCU, men and women's hockey, Tennessee, STA, TU, University, TSU. And another note with that would be with the gaming, and Patrick would be aware of this as well as the other brother, we know that this is a billion, Mike too, as well, this billion-dollar industry with this gaming, right? These video game sport contest challenges, right? Something that's going nowhere. It's a global event. That's why we bring in the world. That's why we're sensitive and talking about a family all across this global nation, right? And with that being said, Tennessee State, because they always had one of the strongest engineering schools, regardless of university, a lot of the Iranian students there went back to Iran, and why their tech is so nice and the United States is concerned is because a lot of them were trained at TSU's engineering school and went back to their country. But with that being said, the gaming, because it's so hot, there's TV shows all about this, some of the major networks have this. TSU is expanding a division of their university to create a gaming degree for students as well, bringing that level of technology. So just want to share a little HBCU news. And, again, like building with the brothers, and I'm done.
Hold that tiger. Hold that tiger. Hold that tiger. Hold that tiger.
If they got gaming, Eric, if they got gaming, money's going to flow like Niagara Falls to that department.
You are so correct, and they're still waiting on that half a billy that they never received from the state of Tennessee since 1967. Right, and so that's in play too. So maybe almost a billy. So a lot of the subtle financing of these programs.
State
endowment funds. Yes,
interest just from interest.
Interest too. Correct. Interest too. Correct. So a lot of this being funded through that route. And one last shout out then, just back to HBCU news. So a brother I've known for a while, y'all have all known him for a while, good dude, we can build on stories about this later. I'll say this. What happens in Sacramento stays in Sacremento. So Reggie Theus is the athletic director and head coach of Bethune-Cookman.
We talked about that last week. Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. Listen, man, I've built with Reggie plenty of times and shit. And the last time I seen him, he took over the King's job, right? And so he told me, he was coming out of a barbershop right fast, and I said, yo, so what's up? What you doing? And I never forget it. He was hoarse as shit, get ready to climb in his Porsche Cayenne. Why he got that kind of car? Because the business has to get in it. He said to me, I said, what are you going to do? What's your game plan? And I never forgot it. He goes, if the brothers can't play for me, the brothers can't play for nobody.
All right. There you go. Well, we'll see. Sounds like they're
going
go to go to
100% exact quote, sir.
Exactly.
Stay tuned.
Wakanda forever. All right. Gary, don't step in the pot, brother.
Father, your son, all star, own brother, I continue. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Vladimir Guerrero. We can't forget King Newby Jr.
Yep.
Brandon Marbon and Bobby Bond. These boys cannot get away with this. They need to either put a flag up or die up or nothing. And all the game continues to be international.
Yes, Lord.
They don't want to do this.
I'll say this much. You're making a good correlation. Baby Vlad lost about 25 pounds or reshaped it in the muscle, and now he really does look like his daddy in terms of his frame and in terms of his swing. When Baby Vlad hits that ball doesn't
that
hit
ball,
the Bugs Bunny.
Lord, Amber.
Mike, I don't, Mike, I don't want to say anything, but it just came down about an hour ago.
Well, one thing we're hopeful for with, you know, Brother Vlad too is that he can read his contract unlike his dad.
No.
Yeah, really. Yeah, really.
That's true.
Really.
True.
That's a good way to put it. The great little
code. Okay, we go one of us, Jerry, and the music box will be Isaac Hayes.
Oh, shit, we talking about Shaq.
Didn't I hear Fred early say, walk on by?
That's right. I knew Shaq and his brother. Shit. Mm-hmm.
Hey, so who's your battle next, Mike? Evelyn Champagne King versus A Taste of Honey?
We're going to hear from A Taste of Honey because we're going to be doing a girls group battle off of all the decades from the 50s to the 60s, 70s, 80s,
nice.
And 90s. And Taste of Honey belongs in the 70s category with groups like First Choice and the Richie Family and others. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get some good shit going on in that set. T-Mac, give us some wisdom, sir.
I've been waiting to say this all night. Hey, Yankee fans, Kumar Rocker, motherfucker.
Was that a Bernie Mac excerpt?
Yes.
Hey, T-Mac,
yes.
Mitch in first place, man.
All I know is there are four other teams behind them. Whether you want to consider them in first place, that's a whole other story. But again, to my fellow friends in the Bronx, Kumar Rocker, motherfucker.
Hey, Gary, not to disappoint you, but Milwaukee Bucks won tonight.
Yeah. Yep.
It's a series.
Where's Rachel Nichols?
She's sharing some day old fries with homegirl from Candace Owens.
Oh, where the hell is Amaya Rashad when you need him?
Another white woman.
Yeah, exactly.
Send both of those Beckys to the bench, and that fat son to the locker room.
You said Boris Becker? Okay, I got it.
Yeah, how about that? Yes. Well, gentlemen, I'm pleased and thankful for the wisdom that you all bring to the table. You know, we keep doing this and keep doing this, and you know that there's people listening. And that's why I play my Zulu War Chant, because you know, always, motherfuckers don't fuck with you. Why? Because they can't handle the truth. I didn't need Tom Cruise to tell me that shit. I knew that shit. We all know that shit. And to make sure that we stay in step with the ancestors, I want to testify that the brothers will continue to do it as long as they draw breath.
Yeah.
We'll see you Saturday with the Stir Fry 2 p.m. followed by Gary Norris Gray and the Great of a Cole. Go safe. Stay safe. Be safe.
Peace out.